So I'm now here at Modifuse. Chris, I started a new tradition this year. When I would interview someone, I would ask them who I should interview next. I've asked Jason from Pathfinder.
Yes.
And he told me to come to you.
Okay, great.
And later I asked also John from Elite Dangerous.
Yes.
And he told me too to come to you. So you're very, very popular.
So I ought to recommend two people at least then, really. So.
Well, I cannot interview with that many people, but yeah. So Modifuse is, it's quite beloved by a lot of people at the moment, not just players, but other publishers.
Yeah, I think they love the games that we're part of, and you know, we've got a lot of fantastic games that are coming out that people love. So we happen to be the spider at the middle of the web, kind of bringing it all together.
Yeah, well, it's funny that the recent announcement regarding Vampire the Masquerade was quite out there, seeing this team of three publishers, well, designers coming together, one for the graphic design, one for the actual game, and Modifuse for the distribution.
Yes.
That's quite a statement of the work you do.
It's been amazing to be part of that, because I remember when Vampire came out and it was just took over the world. You know, it was the
completely I missed those days.
New. And it's been, I think, something like 15 years since it was in shops. So you've only been able to buy it direct, say Onyx Path with their versions. So this is the first time it's actually back in stores, in your local store, with this new edition. It's a whole new start.
I wonder how big it's going to be, because when I started role-playing game, Vampire the Masquerade was the game everybody was playing.
Well, certainly from pre-orders, it's the biggest thing we've ever done.
Really? Wow,
and,
already?
You know, bigger than Star Trek, bigger than Fallout. I mean, it's insane the orders we're seeing. So it certainly seems to be back. And of course, that's just, it's really early in terms of the pre-order. I mean, most people won't usually give orders this far up front, but they are. So
it's not, it's even people amazing. Who, I mean, saw streaming or heard other people playing it. It's not, it's not, because there's so many people. You said 15 years, that means there's a whole generation of people who have no clue what is Vampire the Masquerade.
They've not picked it up in their shop, they've not seen new editions, and you know, so it's really exciting time, because, and it's great for us to do. Obviously, we've got a lot of sci-fi and fantasy, and this is like, you know, doing the vampire game is really awesome. So,
what about Modifuse Creations? I think that your next thing is John Carter from Mars?
Yes, John Carter from Mars is coming in, to backers around August time. Then it'll go into retail September, October. Also, Comfy Panda, which is being demoed next to us, which is like a live dice-rolling miniatures game. You've got like three-minute rounds to roll the combination of symbols you need to move your characters around, beat up the bad guys, save the old lady with the melon carts, take out Tai Lung.
Children seems to love it.
Oh yeah, I mean, adults love it as well. It's another one, like Thunderbirds was our geek mum and dad game. This is another geek mum and dad game. It's a great game for your gaming group, but if you've got kids or you've got parents who like playing games, this is a perfect game for a family as well. It plays quick, it's easy to teach, but it's still a great tabletop game, you know.
It's nice because I don't want to pour water on the work of other designers, but sometimes big license like that, especially things aimed at kids, they end up often being grabbed by companies, or at least in the past they used to be grabbed by companies which were not as careful of designing something really good.
Sure.
So it's nice to see. Is it something happening nowadays that brands like that, DreamWorks or even Disney, are more careful about what they put on the shelves?
There's a lot of companies out there. I mean, it's hard for them to know whether one company is going to do a great game or another. They don't necessarily know the industry. They know whether is it a risk and or a monopoly copycat, or is it something different. So they rely on companies like us, you know, coming up with a good game. And, you know, I will never work on something I don't like.
You reach them then? Or?
So yeah, so we went out, you know, we pitched the idea to DreamWorks. They liked the idea. And I mean, it's taken a long time to develop because they got bought by Universal, so lots of things changed. So, but finally it's approved. It's going on Kickstarter on June 12th. Very, very soon now.
It's a long process, because I remember when I interviewed you 2 years ago. Yeah.
But, I mean, finally. And it's a great game for the delay because we've just kept working on it and refining it. So it's, you know, it's working really well. And so that's going to be our next big board game release this year. Obviously, we've got Siege of the Citadel coming from the Kickstarter finally as well. That's going to be shipping in the late summer. And Fallout's our big, big summer release as well. As a miniatures war game, which is, you know, skirmish based, and
there was a bit of confusion for the next few days regarding Fallout and Bethesda. I don't know if you've seen that.
Fallout 76.
Yeah.
Well, no one knows what it is yet. So, and who knows? I mean, it's very difficult to guess. It always looks cool, but it's great for us because it's more Fallout. Everyone's talking about Fallout again. So,
you still have time as a gamer yourself to play video games like Fallout?
I do, yeah. I mean, I'm playing Fortnite at the moment. I've been playing Surviving Mars, like that kind of Martian city building. I've been playing, obviously, it's a bit of Fallout now and again as well to keep up. Yeah, Fortnite's been my big one, actually. I've been really enjoying that. World of Tanks I do a bit of. So, it's filler moments, you know, when I get a chance. Oh, Conan Exiles. Just been building my little shack with sticks and wood and stone. So yeah, a lot of fun. Yeah.
So anything else at Modifius you want to tell about?
Well, I mean, Star Trek. We've got the new Beta Quadrant book and Command Division books.
Oh, actually, Jason was asking when his scenario was coming out.
Oh yeah, that's in our next scenario compilation. Next, so these are the Voyages book, Volume 2.
I must say, it's very nice to see. A game with adventures. I think it's something which is becoming a bit uncommon with a lot of role-playing games.
There was, I think the industry went through this period where they stopped doing adventures for role-playing games because for whatever reason, maybe they weren't selling enough or whatever. But I know there's plenty of people who can't improvise. They need it written down. And so it's worth doing them, you know. So we try and keep a volume of that going and support every game with adventures. Living campaigns as well is something we're... Yeah, we've been doing Acting Cthulhu and Mutant Chronicles and Star Trek, so big living campaigns.
And you even have your own kind of critical role with Shields of Tomorrow.
Yeah,
that's quite
which
cool.
Has been incredible with those guys. I mean, fantastic production values on the show. I mean, it's been an amazing boost for Star Trek. So, I mean, having that so people can actually watch it played and see how the system works and... You know how it plays out. It's been really awesome.
It's a great show. I mean, as you said, the production, the set, everything.
And the
adventures. And what's exciting with that is to see also the fan art, which comes out.
Yeah. Cool.
So it's your turn now. Of course, you cannot say Paizo or Elite Dangerous. Who do you know at Dragon Meat? Sorry, not Dragon Meat yet. At the UK Games Expo. Which you would recommend me to interview because you find what they do exciting.
You should go and talk to Mark Rapson from WordForge Games.
WordForge Games.
So he's got games like Route 666, which is a great post-apocalyptic car game. They've got D-Day Dice, the new edition of D-Day Dice coming. And they've got this very, very awesome board game called Full Moon Jacket, which is basically... Vietnam and werewolves.
Okay, that's fashionable.
So ask him to show you that.
Delta Green and werewolf.
I've played it. It was amazing. I would have bought it immediately there and then if I could have done, but I couldn't. Yeah, it's not it's not out yet, but it's coming. So
great. Thank you very much, and see you at Dragon Meet.
Thanks a lot. Yes, for sure.
I am now with Carlos at the stand of Burning Games. Carlos, where is my copy of Dragons Conquer America?
Yeah, so it's on the making. It should be with you in a few months.
So in time for Dragon Meat then?
Yeah, it will be on time
so this for Dragon Meat. This way I can skip the delivery fees, which are always a killer for Kickstarter.
Yeah.
So you hit all the goals you set yourself with the pledges there?
Yeah, I think so, because the game started being based only around Mesoamerica. With the stretch goals we managed to get, we will do a lot of information also about the Maya and also about the Inca, which is very exciting.
Are you continuing to play test at the moment? Or?
Yes, so I'm doing the final touches to most of the NPCs at the moment. So I'm making the dragons themselves. So all the different rules for all the different types of dragons and so on. Because in Mesoamerican mythology, there's quite a few of different ones. So yeah.
But all South America was not enough for you, because now I've heard that you are going back to the other side of the Atlantic. Yeah. You've got plans there, right?
After coming up with the concept of Dragons Conquer America, one of the first things that came up was like, what about the other continents? And we thought it would be very exciting to bring the whole idea of Dragons Conquer America to the other continents. So basically, what we're doing is kind of like a fantasy game based in real history, right? So we are twisting and changing many real events and myths to a modern gameplay RPG style, but we're basing it on real history. It's very exciting because I really like my history. So it's very exciting to be able to bring all of this to life with a twist of my own making. So it's a lot of fun.
So remind me, what are the days? What is kind of the era? What's going on in Europe at that time?
So it's 1512.
Yep.
That's the year we have based the game on. So basically, Cortes hasn't arrived on the continent yet. So we don't know what is going to happen because, well, there's going to be dragons. So everything can be different, right? So in America, most of the players and most of the adventures are going to be based in a pre-colonial setting. So you will be playing Mexica characters who believe they are the kings of the world and they own and have made vassals of everyone around them. It's a completely different feeling from like a post-colonial kind of thing. And in Europe, so we have twisted and changed some of the stories to make it more interesting. So, for example, from America, some conquistadors and explorers have found the Fountain of Eternal Youth, which is one of the many very important myths that came from the conquistadors era. They have brought back some of that water. They always bring it for the king and the queen, the Catholic kings of Spain. So they haven't died yet. So they're still on the throne of Spain, and that can change history completely, because everything went downhill for the Spanish Empire kind of after Fernando died. So that's going to be a bit different. Also, we're taking all the legends about the vampires from the East and making them kind of true. Many kingdoms of the East that have a border with the Turkish, with the Ottoman Empire, they are going to be vampires. It's going to be a strange relationship between the vampires and the Catholic Church, because these vampires are ruling over Catholic peasants, but the church cannot do anything about them because they are the ones who are holding back the Muslim invasion. So that's going to be very interesting, how vampires, Catholicism, as a party over there, huh?
Yeah.
Someone wants something.
See. Cosplayers.
Oh, it's cosplayers. I thought it was the fantasy flight. So it's going to be very interesting how these vampires fit in between Catholic and a Muslim war.
A pact with the devil, sort of. Yeah.
Kind of, yeah. And also the Ottoman Empire is going to be important, as it was in history. We really want to explore that, because for many people, like, the Ottoman Empire is kind of like a forgotten kind of thing, and they basically almost conquered Europe, so they had the chance, and they could have changed everything. So it's going to be very interesting. Then, although Arthurian legends and medieval, even you could say almost pre-medieval, to be honest.
So you remind me a bit, 1500s, is it? People are going to yell at me, but are we in Elizabethan?
No, in 20 years or so, or less, the Church of England appears.
Okay, so it's Anne Boleyn and Henry, yeah.
So, although Arthurian legends are more for the medieval times, we really wanted to bring them into kind of an interesting way. So, there's going to be raids from Avalon, from the land of the fairies and the myths and everything, from the all religions, coming and trying to fight back for England, led by Arthur himself.
Okay.
So in many legends, Arthur is seen as a Catholic champion, but this is the retelling of the Arthurian legends, because in the early legends of Arthur, he's more in sync with the Celtic religion. And even when he almost dies, he's taken to the land of the Celtic religion.
So, or are you dealing with the Tudors then at this time? Because I think Henry the Eighth was a Tudor, right?
I can't remember, to be honest. I just have the very overlay of it. I have to really go in and dig and study.
So it's still very early project.
It's very, very... It's just a concept at the moment.
I see,
just working on Dragons, Conquer America, all that. Yeah. So all these things, I'm telling you, they come from the basics and writing from my own thoughts and from what I remember. I would have to reread everything and to remember.
So this is something like, I don't know, 2 years, 3 years?
Yeah, 2 years probably.
Yeah.
I'm thinking 2 years for sure.
Okay. Anything else happening at Burning Games you want to talk about?
Yeah, of course. So we're finally, I mean, we have been talking about this with our backers since 2015, but we're finally making Korbel for real. So Korbel is a sports game. It's based in the universe of Faith. Mm-hmm. And we're going to make it into a miniature board game. It's going to be very competitive and very strategic. And it's basically people flying through space in their spacesuits, trying to get the hold of a ball and not crash against asteroids. And you will have a team of many different characters with their own unique abilities, and you have to fight for the ball. The development of this game has taken forever, mostly because it is very, very expensive to make miniatures. So we have been having to save up from all the projects we have been doing over the years. It's thanks to our partnership with Big Child, who is a great miniature designer company. They have designed many miniatures for example, Cool Mini or Not, Dur the Stars. They're amazing. They are one of the few companies that are very good at making plastic molds, which is quite different from the metal or resin kind of miniatures. We're very happy to be able to join them, because that's kind of the step we needed to do this, because we are partners in the endeavor. That's going to allow us to create all of this that is so expensive, and we wouldn't be able to do it without it.
That's interesting, because I spoke yesterday to the people doing the role-playing game Elite Dangerous, and they created a card game. And I know, I'm not sure if I will be able to interview them, but the team of Free Aliga, the Free League, the authors of Simba Room and Coriolis, etc., are at the Modifius stand, and they're also here with a board game. What motivates a role-playing game business to move into board games?
Well, I mean, I love board games, so, and I love
quite
playing
simply.
Them. Yeah, so my first designs are from war games. They have never been published, because there's no money in the world for that. And then we did RPGs because, well, I grew up with RPGs. But in later years, I have less and less time to play RPGs. So I have very little time to play other RPGs than my own, because I need to do playtesting. If I have time, I have to do playtesting instead of playing someone else's game. So I read them because I need to expand my mind and see what's new, see what's on the market, you know, like where we stand as an industry. But I don't really have time to play them. While board games, I can. Once every week or every 2 weeks, meet with some friends and play two or three board games, right? So that's very nice about board games. And also, because I come from a wargaming background, I really love miniatures, and I love the chance of making a board game with miniatures. So miniatures and board games is a very nice match. It's new for the last probably 5 years.
It's getting very popular.
So popular, because machines now are so precise, and the price has been reduced a lot. So you can have final built miniatures. You don't have to build them yourself. You don't have to do anything like that. It's just great, and you just buy the box, everything's there. So it's very nice. To be honest, I think we really need to do board games, because RPGs just don't move enough money.
Yeah, so it's more financially interesting and more supportive of your business to move into the board game field as well. Then.
Yes. So, I mean, RPGs are amazing, and I love making them, and it's just a lot of fun. And we will continue to do that. As we have so spoken, we're going to make the Dragons Conquer Europe thing, which might eventually become Dragons Conquer Africa, Dragons Conquer Asia. You know, so we will do them because we love doing them. But it's not really worth economically.
I can imagine this. Well, any business, you want to diversify also. So you have different products of different kinds. So when one is, I don't know, slightly less fashionable, you've got something else that you're still selling. Yeah. It makes perfect sense.
Also, making an RPG takes me forever. You know, it's 400 pages of stuff. And a lot of research, because these ones are historical. Yeah, so like as just before, we were like, oh, who was the king of where? Like, I have to study that. I cannot mess it up. Well, this is just in my head, and it's very simple, and just do it.
And there's kind of an inverse return in the sense that all this work in a role-playing game, I mean, if I purchase Cobble, it's more likely I'd be able to play it a dozen times with friends if I play now and then.
Yeah.
While a role-playing game, well, if I'm able to play once through a campaign of Dragons Conquer America, there will be already a lot of...
Yeah.
Is there going to be also a Dragon Conquer America board game then?
Actually, I am designing a strategy game in Mesoamerica. So it's not going to be Dragons because it's not going to be Europeans. It's only about before they arrive. And it's going to be... kind of, I've been playing Paradox a lot lately. That's my main reference for that game. I want to do a proper strategy with a large map and 4X kind of thing. And I wanted to do it in Mesoamerica because, well, I have been working in Mesoamerican setting for the last year and it's kind of in my mind a lot. And because I love the area and I love... it's very unique and it's very different and they have this whole... floor of wars thing going on that is very different from other areas. Like the way they conquer, the way they fight each other, the reasons for doing so are so different from European ones, right?
I already mentioned the show History on Fire about the conquest of Mesoamerica, and one of the things I remember they mentioned about the Mexica is that first of all they were kind of a foreign power which moved in into the region.
Yes. And they were nomads.
And second, even when they managed to defeat a lot of the people around them, apparently they were still keeping some, so they would have victories over other kingdoms, but they would not take over the kingdom. They would let it survive, so just it could become stronger, and they would fight it again because it was in the way they saw things, allegedly, that they preferred to keep themselves stronger in battle by keeping enemies that they would always fight in a sport fashion.
There's many theories about the whole Flora Wars thing, and that's one of the theories. Other theories are basically their main idea was to keep the neighbors weak. So they were expanding constantly, but they wanted to expand in like a smart way. So they were not expanding, they were doing the Flora Wars thing, so these guys would remain weak and they would remain sending them tribute and they would keep killing their young soldiers so they wouldn't build an army ever. And it was a very smart way of keeping them on check and also train. Their own soldiers were constantly training against these people.
So I guess unlike the Romans, which went to a point and that was their border and they were in charge of their own border, what this Mexican civilization was doing maybe was keeping a buffer of weaker neighbors.
And like many of the nations that appear after wars between superpowers, you know, they kind of buffer nations, And it's also very interesting for my game because there's no player elimination. There's a little bit of conquest, but it's mostly about making each other vassals of each other. And that means that there's no player elimination. So there's basically several ways of winning, but one of them is becoming the main culture. I might become your vassal, but if my culture is so strong and powerful and interesting, your people will start to become me, you know?
Like, the Greek and the Romans.
All the barbarians that conquered Rome and became Romans.
Exactly, yeah.
That's kind of the thing I'm doing with this game design. Instead of being heavy on battles, it's going to be subtly changing the situation of the demography of the population and stuff like that. So that's what I'm trying to do. And this location is perfect for that.
Exciting. You got a title already?
No, it's Mesoamerica now.
Well, we'll see. Well, thank you so much, Carlos.
Of course,
and,
thank you.
We'll see you. I will see you with my copy of Dragons Conquer America in Dragon Meet in December. Yeah. Cheers. Thanks.
Thank you.
Long live the king. Long live the king. Long live the king. Long live the king.
There you go. So I'm now here at the Lamentation of the Flame Princess booth with a literally brain frozen individual. Can you introduce yourself to the listeners?
My name is James Edward Radji IV. I am the publisher of Lamentations of the Flame Princess and writer of some of the adventures and supplements as well.
You got a different partner in crime than in Dragonmead this time.
Actually, no. She's the same one from Dragonmead.
Oh, yeah, you were with a gentleman in Dragon Meet.
Well, Patrick was there at Dragon Meet, too. But, yeah, Julia's been with me at the conventions since Ropicon July of last year.
Cool, excellent. I was looking forward to come to your stand, but I was looking... Well, first of all...
First of all, yes.
Thank you. because at Dragon Mead you convinced me to buy the Monolith Beyond Space and Time.
Yes.
I haven't run it yet, but I'm very happy with that purchase.
Good to hear. Good to hear.
It's very exciting content, and I look forward to running it. But I was looking forward to another book, and I don't see it on the table.
Oh, God. Which one?
Underwater Lovers or something like that.
Oh, actually, we do have one copy of Fish F***.
Ah, okay. That's the title.
Underwater Lovers, yes.
So, no, I was told that it could not be on top of the table.
Well, I assumed that in England it couldn't be on top of the table, but then I realized nobody's told me that, so I just put it on the table. There's been no problems. Nobody's expressed any displeasure to me, and we've sold all but one of them, and I suspect that one's going to go before the end of the day.
Okay, can you ask Julie to put it aside for me?
Can you put the fish aside so he can get it?
Yeah. Thank you very much.
And we also have just one copy left of Frostbitten and Mutilated, if you were wanting that set aside too.
Well, tell me, what is it about?
Frostbitten and Mutilated. It's by Zach Smith. He did Red and Pleasant Land and Vornheim. I don't know yet. And the original pitch for it was Viking Amazons of the Metal North. So it's just like really cold, black and white, black metal, Arctic kind of brutality, and but with Amazon tribes living up in the mountains of Norway.
How does it compare to Monolith Beyond Space and Time? I mean, is it, what type of content is it actually?
It's a setting. It's a regional setting. Monolith is just this situational adventure that can be anywhere and any when. But the Frostbitten and Mutilated, it's pretty much you have to put that somewhere up north, and it's a set location where things are happening.
I actually really like that about Monolith, the fact that it was situational and could fit to any setting. Do you have other products in that vein?
Oh, stuff with that. Nothing that's quite as flexible as that one, because that can be used in any sort of science fiction game or horror game. The other one that might come close is blah, 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 Broodmother Sky Fortress.
Okay.
Because that's based on an ancient, it's like an ancient flying city or flying palace that's been populated by giant shark elephant centaur creatures.
Okay.
Yeah, and they just fly around and they wreck things. And so you can really put that in any sort of setting. We even have in the book, we've got illustrations, you know, from the Old West, you know, a Star Trek parody. So that could be any time and any when.
Some Doctor Strange parody, I see.
Yeah.
Also.
Oh, yeah. Well, Jeff Reince, we had the idea of, as a marketing gimmick, making him the Archmage of old school. So in the art, we have him dressed up like famous wizards.
Cool. Excellent. What can you tell about Fish for people who have
fish
not heard about it?
Okay. It's, well, it's basically, how do I say that? It's obviously based on Shadows over Innsmouth. And
obviously,
yes. It takes place in the sunny seaside English village of Innsmouth, where there is questionable activities going on. And it's just a matter of the player characters discovering exactly what and why, and then deciding what they're going to do about it. But whatever you're thinking right now, the reality of what's going on there is much, much worse.
Okay, so it's an adventure.
Yes, yes.
You can use it with any rule system, or you got the stats for Lamentation of the Flame Princess.
Yeah, I mean, probably not any rule system, and it is statted up for Lamentations, but that means it's very easily compatible with, you know, old school D&D, even 5th edition. With a little bit of work, 3rd edition might be a stretch for 4th edition, but people use Lamentation stuff with the Warhammer system and Call of Cthulhu and RuneQuest, of course, and basically anything that's a traditional style role-playing game, it's, people use it, and apparently that's fine, and, you know, I don't complain.
Actually, I was considering trying to do Monolith with Dungeon World.
Okay.
But
yeah, I don't know that much about how that actually runs. I've got the Dungeon World book, but it's just written from a completely different point of view that I don't think I really get it. So hopefully it'll work for you. I just can't. I don't have the knowledge to say yes, that'll be a good fit.
Do you have anything else to plug for Lamentations at the moment?
Well, the newest stuff we have out, well, Frostbitten and Mutilated. We've got the 10th anniversary of the Random Esoteric Creature Generator for classic fantasy role-playing games in their modern simulacra. You know, I think we've got about 100, 150 of those left, so there should be more. There should be some left by the time this gets posted, whenever that'll be. Just go to lotfp.com and hit the web store, and we've got everything there. Or your local store should be able to order Lamentations stuff. We are in distribution.
Great. Is it new? I mean,
no, I've been in distribution for a few years now, and that's going pretty good. Difficult issues. In the past 6 months or so, Amazon has really started picking my stuff up, and I've got mixed feelings about that because it's selling a lot of copies through Amazon, but Amazon does the deep discount thing. And, I mean, it doesn't make a difference to me because whether it's sold through a local game store or through Amazon, I make the same money off the sale. But the fact that they're undercutting everybody, that makes me uneasy. But what am I going to do about it? I mean, an independent role-playing game company fighting Amazon seems like a really stupid thing to try to do. So maybe I'll just go with it and enjoy the money. But I see that how much they sell, and I go, yeah, that's cool. Then realize why it's like that, and it's kind of depressing. So yeah, I'm not sure what to make of that. I mean, I can be a hypocrite and say I order from Amazon all the time because I live in Finland, so there is no real good local source for English books. So, you know, that's, you know, as far as non-game books, I've got a good game store in Helsinki, so I can order through them for game books. But in general, yeah. So now I'm babbling about Amazon. Next question, please.
Well, I was trying the Amazon affiliate thing with my podcast. It didn't work very well, so I cannot be critical of that either.
Yeah.
And I do order a lot with them, although I live in a city with a few good shops. But, yeah. You know.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm here in Birmingham, and I went down to Waterstones and paid £120 for actual books from a bookstore. So I don't know if they count as independent, but they're not Amazon.
Could you compare the UK Games Expo with Dragon Meat, or what are the positive about the UK Games Expo that you don't have in Dragon Meat?
Well, honestly, I like Dragon Meat better because, well, logistics. Finnair flies direct Helsinki to London, so I can just buy a bunch of extra luggage really cheap and just bring all my stuff in suitcases, show up in London, it's a one-day convention, and then go home. Birmingham, because I've got to use another airline for part of the flights, I can't load up, so I got to have stuff shipped here and then have stuff shipped back, and it's a longer thing. It's a three-day convention, so I'm away from home. So UK Games Expo, it's the kind of thing, I make more money here, but again, I like getting in and out more conveniently.
So you're not among the people campaigning for Dragon Meat to be several days long then?
Well, the thing is, I don't know how that would work. I mean, if it's just 3 days, you know, if it's 2 or 3 days to make the same money I was making in 1 day, that would be awful. Because that just means, you know, more hotels and more, you know, when I first started doing the convention circuit, I used to think, oh, this is a rock and roll lifestyle. I'm touring. But realistically, I'm traveling long distances to stand 8 hours behind a table and beg people to like me.
So you mostly see hotels and the same table and the covers of your books in the reverse.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's a job.
It's a job. Yeah.
The fun part of the role-playing industry is actually creating things. The selling part is a job.
It's interesting how logistics is becoming a subject that creators get more outspoken about because it's a reality they have to deal with. Yeah. Okay, cool. Thank you very much. One last thing to add to the listeners of the Rollist podcast.
Yeah, please, stay weird.
Thank you, James.
Okay, thank you.
As I walked out one May morning, down by the riverside, there I beheld a bold fisherman come rowing by the tide. Come rowing by the tide. There I beheld a bold fisherman come rowing by the tide. Good morning to you, my bold fisherman. How come you fishing here? I come here a-fishing for your sweet sake along this river clear. Along this river clear. I come here a-fishing for your sweet sake along this river clear. He drew his boat up onto the bank, and for her made his bend. He took her by the lily white hand, which was his full intent. Which was his full intent. He took her by the lily white hand, which was his full intent. He took the cloak from off of his back and gently laid it down. There she beheld three chains of gold hang dangling three times round. Hang dangling three times round. There she beheld three chains of gold hang dangling three times round. She fell down on her bended knee. For mercy she implored. In calling you a bold fisherman, wanna fear you are some lord. Wanna fear you are some lord. In calling you a bold fisherman, wanna fear you are some lord. Rise up, my pretty fair maid. From off your bended knee, there is not one word that you have said has least offended me. Has least offended me. There is not one word that you have said has least offended me. He took her by the lily white hand, saying, married we shall be. Then you shall have a bold fisherman to row you on the sea. To row you on the sea. Then you shall have a bold fisherman to row you on the sea.
So I'm here again with two lovely people, but where am I? And who are you?
You are at UK Games Expo in Hall 2, Stall B2. I am Grant Howitt.
I'm Mary Hamilton, and we are We are part of Rowan, Rook and Deckard. We make tabletop role-playing games, small, weird, interesting stuff mostly. And we're also here together with three other organisations as part of the UK Indie RPG League. So we're very new. We're a collection of very small indie RPG publishers. And we're kind of here because it's really difficult for indie RPG publishers, who usually it's only kind of one or two people involved. It's really difficult for us to afford to come kind of on our own to an event like this. Whereas if we band together, we all, can all sell each other's products. We can all kind of collaborate on something. There's more than enough space in the industry for us all to cooperate. And it means that we all get a seat at the table at an event like this, which is just awesome. It's the first time we've ever been here, and it's lovely.
It's a great win-win for everyone. Well, Grant, I did not realize you were here this weekend because I bought your game / t-shirt this morning.
Oh, you bought Honey Heist?
Yeah.
So the game / t-shirt, it represents, I believe, the forefront of wearable technology. And that no one before has made a role-playing game wearable on your torso or legs, but we've done the torso. Now, there may be a reason why this market hasn't been tapped, because it's a stupid idea. But it seems to be selling, so that's very nice.
It's very popular. I've heard about it all over Twitter before I came here. So
I think it's very good for cons, especially because you can go to a bar and like, do you want to play a game? Which game? And then just point at your chest.
No, it's great because I regretted I didn't take any of my indie games when I came this weekend. So this way, I got this one and I can carry it around. You know, at first I thought the technology would be. Something. I was thinking, wait a minute, something is not working there. Or do I read it as a game master? But actually, you sorted that.
Yes, we've printed the games master section upside down.
Yeah, so you just look at your belly.
You look at your tummy there, and the players can see all the important player info.
What are your projects at the moment?
So, our projects at the moment, we have... the main thing we're doing is Spire, which is a fantasy role-playing game about overthrowing the government. You play a cell of Dark Elf freedom fighters overthrowing an invading High Elf government. It's very brutal. It's grim. Generally, games end with everyone getting shot in the street. But it's receiving a lot of love, and it's really lovely to see our community start to spring up around it. We've got some awesome art in there as well, so it's really nice to, you know, get that happening.
Yeah, I really like the art. It's very graphic and different. I'm into graphic design, and it really speaks to me as doing something. Also, I guess it's not a coincidence. It reminds me of... kind of propaganda posters.
Yes, and very much so, yeah. That's what that very stark look. We wanted to have, like, basically all role-playing games are propaganda and all maps are propaganda. We wanted to sort of have that as an idea which was going through. So we also release one-page role-playing game a month for free through Patreon. So basically we get supported through Patreon to do that. But we also, like, at cons, we print them out and we have a back page of sort of illicit secret content. So, like, this month we had a Jason Statham's Big Vacation, where you must make sure Jason Statham has a good vacation. On the back, we have Bryan Cranston's Big Expansion, which was definitely written by Bryan Cranston, a star of Breaking Bad. It has rules for playing Jason Statham's dog, Floyd.
So you said that, and I got the gif of Bryan Cranston saying, "Ooh, me." I don't know if you know that one.
Yes, definitely that.
Sadly, your colleague was taken away by...
Unfortunately, she has to go and sell a game about kissing orcs to an orc.
You're here to do that, not to speak to podcasters. But what can you tell us about the other games at the table since...
Okay, no worries, cool. So, we have just three other companies here with us. There's UFO Press, there's Black Armada, and there's Certain Death. So UFO Press is fronted by James Isles. They've got this brilliant game called Legacy, which is about rebuilding after the apocalypse. So it's a post-apocalyptic game which is loads of hope in it. It's a wonderful... It's called Legacy because you play multiple generations of, like, a family or an organization trying to reshape the world in its image.
So you play the kind of Amazon in Mad Max with the big shoulder pads all in white and...
Well, that's the thing. Like you'd play her, and then you'd play her child, and then you'd play... And you carry on and go, and you just watch how the world gets changed in your own image. That's very cool. We've got from Certain Death, we have Pig Smoke, where you play the faculty at a university, America's third most prestigious university for witches and wizards. So it's basically, you're just trying to get your lesson plans through, but also try and avoid summoning a demon in the basement. And then we've got Black Armada, who have Lovecraft-esque, which is a postmodern approach to doing Cthulhu-style stories. It fixes two of the things with Call of Cthulhu. In the one, it's about a single protagonist rather than about six flapper girls with revolvers. And two, it cuts out all that horrible racism and sexism.
So is it a solo game or is it a game where...
It's a GM-less game. As you play, you'll take turns controlling the protagonist and everyone else will make choices about the story pushing forward and things growing. Awesome. It's there's some other cards which go with it as well. I'm really impressed with it.
One of the subject or the goals of the Rollist podcast is to make as many geeks and tabletop RPG fans come to London, and if not, be very jealous not to live in London.
Yeah.
What is it like, you think, to be a tabletop RPG fan and even designer living in London?
Is it
a good place?
Well, I live in Manor Park.
Ah, okay.
Which is so East London, it's barely London anymore, but we're trying to save up and buy a house.
It's still the Piccadilly line, right?
Oh, no, no, that's TfL Rail, my friend.
Ouch.
Yeah, it's okay, it's all right. We're 20 minutes from Stratford, so it's not so bad. But then I guess you have to go to Stratford. However, it's okay, you know what? I really like being part of the London gaming scene, because we have a gaming scene. As a playtester, as a games developer, I have the capacity to say, hey, I'm playing this game tonight. Who wants to come and help out? And I can get a few people interested. We can go to a pub somewhere. We can play a game. It just means that there are so many humans together that odds are one in 10 of them, one in 100 of them is interested in playing a game. And that's really cool to be part of.
I started this show, and one of the topics was a club of role players, which is the club of French-speaking role players of London. So because you have even just French-speakers, you have enough of them to have a club of role players. And just this week, I found out there's a tabletop RPG club of Polish role players also, which
that makes more sense to me. But yeah,
what is a lot of French speakers?
There's a lot of French speakers. There's a lot more Polish people, certainly.
I suspect that there must be a Spanish speaking club also.
Oh, I'm sure. Yes, Dutch, everything. I'm sure.
One final thing to say before I let you. Sorry to interview you
on a
Saturday.
Worry, it's fine. It's okay. I would say if you are at any board games expo, any sort of expo whatsoever, and you're interested in buying something, please be kind to the people on stalls. This is the first convention I've worked on a stall, and my body has been reduced to sort of bird bones and garbage. I feel like hot trash.
People were not mean to you, I hope.
No. They're not mean. No. The clientele have been absolutely wonderful. But please, like, we are all running on fumes. We're so tired. We're running on Diet Coke and cigarettes. Please be kind to us.
Thank you very much, Grant.
Thank you for interviewing
me. We'll see you around in London.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
This episode included Giant Insect from Mars 1 by The Shamblers, The King is Dead by Nutmeg, The Bold Fisherman by Alistair Thompson, and of course Salta of Rango, or theme song by Bande de Roll. The logo of the Race podcast is designed by Ron Kurtz. Ron Kurtz designed a number of other visuals which you can find alongside the logo on a number of merchandising. The link to Redbubble is in the description of this episode. The Rollist podcast is a proud member of the RPG Academy Network. So that's it. That was part two of our interviews recorded at UK Games Expo 2018. Thanks to John Dodd and the organizers for allowing me to record there. And thanks to the Rollist supporting the show via Patreon for helping me with the expense to go. The next part will be a little bonus. It will be an actual play I recorded with Brenda LaSalle from Dungeon Crawl Classics, who was visiting us in the UK at the time, and it was a great encounter and a great game, and I cannot wait to edit and release that. Speaking of bonus episode, if you support the show via Patreon, you will have access to a bonus show, Café Rollist, which sees myself and Akadosh discuss our ongoing games and the latest news of tabletop RPG. If you listen to this episode close to its release, maybe there's still time for you to join us at Le Drinks and Dice on July 30. It will be at the Tank and Paddle. There's a link again in the description of the episode. There's loads in the description of the episode. This is the list of all the games which were named, all of them, and all the other stuff also. And if these are tabletop RPG available on DriveThru, if you click the link and purchase it, well, it will give a small contribution to finance the Rollist podcast via the DriveThru affiliate program. And I would be much thankful for any of your purchases. And I mean, we discuss a lot of indie games, and people behind those games are really awesome. And it would be great for you to consider purchasing Spire, Legacy, Big Smoke, or Lovecraft-esque, to name just the one come up out of my head, because we named so many games, that's why I list them all. I cannot remember all of them. This is way too many, but they're all listed. I take the time to list them all when I'm editing my episode. So please go to the description of the episode and you will find them all. I hope you enjoyed this second part of our episode 29. Please send me your feedback, if possible, a positive review on iTunes or Podchaser. If not, I'm available on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Feel free to follow us there and to reach me, and usually I reply in a very short notice. See you soon for the first part of our bonus actual play of Dungeon Crawl Classic with Brenda Lassalle at the UK Games Expo. And in the meantime, have good games! Holy! 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 Solta o frango e vem com a gente! Holy! 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 Solta o frango e vem com a gente! Nós é tipo bem Jesus, todo mundo a gente ama. Ainda mais se for gatinha, rola até levar pra cama. A gente topa tudo, sapatão e bigodudo na hora do piriri. Cai em mim, ô travesti.
Vai, batuque!
Holy! 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 Solta o frango e vem com a gente! Holy! 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 Solta o frango e vem com a gente!
This is pointless. The war is over.
Irrelevant! Under the terms of the Martial Law Act, Section 12.J, those refusing to comply with the curfew order are to be pacified. Repeat, will you comply?
Will you comply?
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 Loop detected. Error. Error. Civilian, a mandatory curfew is in effect. Return to your home immediately.
Curfew?
By order of Provisional Governor Grant.